Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join in on the phone, online, or via a text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts on News Talk 1400 DWS as we hit the middle of the week. Hump day here on this Wednesday. A cloudy, breezy day in store, as you heard from Michael Kaiser on the forecast. And a busy day ahead here on Penny for Your Thoughts as we will talk about the 20th annual Roger Ebert's Film Festival, Ebert Fest as it's known, at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. We'll run through all of the films that are going to be shown and talked about, all the different panels that are going to be discussed, topics at those panels and so forth, the panels that are going to be held downtown at the Hyatt Place Hotel. So I know a lot of you that attend the films and have gone every year for the last 20 years. This is kind of Christmas for you the next few days as we start Ebert Fest this evening at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. We have some guests for you, and we've got a couple of additions and changes to our guest list that are coming in. One is going to be Andy Davis, who is the director, was the director of The Fugitive, which is going to kick off the movies tonight, the films tonight at 7 o'clock at the Virginia Theater at 7 p.m. So we'll talk to Andy Davis. He's from the University of Illinois. Interesting background for him as he worked his way up and, of course, became the director of The Fugitive, among other films that he has done. So, Asante, who is the director of Bell, which is going to be shown at 8:30 on Thursday night at the Virginia Theater. And Nate Cohn, of course, has been in charge of a lot of this for many, many years. We'll run through all the different films and all the activities surrounding Ebert Fest in the next few days, all the way until, the last film at noon on Sunday. So we'll get it started here in studio with our guest. We'll start off after this opening timeout. Give us a call if you have any questions for our guests along the way, comments you want to make, 356-9397. Email us, talk at WDWS.com, or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. We'll come back with more Penny for Your Thoughts, talking Ebert Fest this first hour. Second hour, we'll look back a little bit at the life of Barbara Bush, who just passed away at the age of 92. So a busy Wednesday on Penny for Your Thoughts. Back in a moment. We're on Penny for Your Thoughts on this Wednesday as we start Ebert Fest, the 20th annual Roger Ebert Film Festival here at the Virginia in Champaign. And Champaign-Urbana, of course. Roger always loved coming here every year for this. And we've got some great guests for you today. We've got Nate Cohn in studio with us. Of course, he's been here, I think, pretty much from the beginning, if the architect of a lot of this. So it's great to see you, Nate. Thanks for coming in.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, we'll pull that mic a little closer to you there. We want to be able to. There you go. Great to have you back.
And it's good to be back. It's strange to be in your new studio.
Yeah, isn't
I'm
it?
I'm used to the old one.
Well, we were down there for a long time.
Yeah.
The building was there since the late 40s, and we've been in here since October, so a little bit different feel with that, with the downtown feel, but we're glad you're here, and I know that it's hard to believe this is the 20th.
Yeah, it's harder for Chaz and me to believe because we've been here all 20 years.
Yeah.
Still as vibrant and still alive as ever. We're really happy to be back. Mm-hmm.
And I know Chaz was planning to be here, but she got held up a little bit in Los Angeles yesterday. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So she'll be coming in today.
Okay, we'll look forward to seeing her over at the Virginia Theater. And Virginia Theater still is as good as ever, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're proud to have played a large part in the renovation of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now state of the art. And so we're opening tonight with Andy Davis's film, The Fugitive.
Yeah,
it's
7 o'clock. We want to talk about that. Andy Davis is here. You may have seen a News Gazette little article on him before. And you're from around. You went to the U of I and everything. So you're coming back home in a sense.
It's hard to believe 50 years ago I graduated from here. I'm really much younger than I sound.
Well, you don't look like you 50 years ago, but... So what were those days like as you got started here at the U of I? And kind of launched your career, I guess, right?
Well, I started as a communications major, and very shortly after, I started working at WILL. Mm-hmm. And we were, in those days, you did everything. You know, we would put up magnetic clouds and numbers for the weather, and then the stock market numbers were minuscule. And I had a wonderful professor later on named Henry Lippold, mm-hmm. who was a legend in the journalism department. And I was very involved in the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement at the time, and eventually wound up on camera doing the student news report, you know, the mm-hmm. draft card burnings and the first communist to speak on campus and all kinds of very interesting stuff. But mm-hmm. Champaign was a very vital place. We were from 64 to 68 was the transition from fraternities were hip to fraternities weren't too hip anymore. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole movement of student activism that developed at that time. Mm-hmm. But, I had to work my way through college and wound up washing dishes for Dick Butkus and doing things like that.
Oh, wow. So you had that connection with the great Dick Butkus. So, yeah. And you were telling me something before we came in about at halftime of the games you used to do something, help the marching Illini, is that right?
Well, the first computers were developed here. It was called Iliac 1. It was a building about the size of your building right here. Mm-hmm. I think our iPhones hold 6,000 times more information. It was with tubes. It was freezing in there. And they were using that computer to figure out with punch cards how the marching band could walk in formation at halftime mm-hmm. for the big Illini marching band. So mm-hmm. we would stand there with a wide lens and shoot the field at halftime so they could see whether the computers were working. That was my beginning in the film business.
We're going to talk to Andy some more here as we get ready to look at The Fugitive that starts tonight. We also have another guest, a third guest in studio, Emma Asante, who is the director of Bell, among other things.
Hello, hi.
From England.
That's right, all the way from England. California last night.
Yeah, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in London, in South London, a place called Streatham. And I was there for 37 years and then headed over to the Netherlands for a while. And mm-hmm. and now I'm homeless. Now I live everywhere in all places.
Well, we're glad to have you in Champaign-Urbana. And is this your first
It's my first Ebert Fest, my first time in Chicago, my first time in Champaign. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, we're thrilled to have you. And, of course, you directed Bell, which is going to be shown at the Virginia Theater tomorrow night uh-huh. at 8:30. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that a little bit, review all of the films here with Nate. But you have two outstanding directors here, Nate.
And listening to Andy talk, it reminds me of all the things I've tried to forget about my early years in Champaign. Urbana. I'm an Urbana boy, so. Mm-hmm. But in 68, I was working at WICD, the NBC station at the time mm-hmm. here. And I remember saying to the news director, I need to go to Chicago to cover the Democratic convention. Mm-hmm. And I pestered them long enough that they actually let me go to Chicago and with my Bolex camera and shoot the riots in Grant Park. And I ended up in medium cool in a background shot.
Well, we're going to start with The Fugitive tonight. So tell us about that. And why start with The Fugitive, I guess, right out of the gate? I know you and work off a list, you and Chaz together off of Roger's list from over the years. But tell me why you start with The Fugitive, I guess.
Well, we normally show a 70-millimeter print on a film of some kind on opening night, but we just felt that when Andy agreed to be able to come, we just thought The Fugitive was a massive draw, and it's a film everybody loves, and we thought it was a perfect opening night film. I mean, it's an action-packed thriller, and it has Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones in it, mm-hmm. and it's shot in Chicago.
Yeah, and in being in Chicago, which was a place near and dear to your heart, right, Andy?
I grew up there, yes.
Yeah, so tell us about how that came about, how the director of The Fugitive, what went into planning it. You had the TV series, I guess, The Fugitive and all that was tied in, but tell me how you got involved in that, and did it come out the way you thought it would? How about that for a two-part question?
Well, I had just finished a film with Tommy Lee Jones and Steven Seagal called Under Siege. Mm-hmm. And I went to the in L.A. in Beverly Hills, and Arnold Copleson came up to me as a producer. I didn't know he'd worked with Oliver Stone on his Vietnam movie, and he said, "I know your next picture." And I said, "Okay, thank you. I don't know who you are, but thank you." And I got a call Sunday night from the head of production at Warner Brothers, Bruce Berman, congratulating me. And I said, "What happened?" And he said, "Well, Harrison saw Under Siege over the weekend. He wants you to direct The Fugitive." So I went to a meeting, I think, Monday morning, and I got in the script, and the script really made no sense at all to me. Mm. But Harrison had committed, and so they said, "Well, we're not sure we're going to shoot it," and this and that. And so I called up my sister, who's a nurse, and I said, "Josie, I've got the biggest star in the business. The studio's really behind me because Under Siege is going to be a hit." I said, "But the script makes no sense." I said, "What could really get a doctor in trouble?" So 3 days later, she calls back. She went back to the hospital in L.A. to Cedars-Sinai and talked to her colleagues. He says, "What if there's a drug protocol that's going on, and this doctor says it's not working, it's causing bleeding?" And that became the basis of the script. My sister doesn't get credit for this. So we created a drug called Provasic and a company called Devlin McGregor, named after my producer, Peter McGregor Scott, Devlin McGregor.
So that's where that came from.
And so that became the basis of it. And we brought the crew, a lot of our Chicago crew that had been in Alabama making Under Siege. Harrison's from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I went to visit him in Jackson Hole, and I got off the plane. He says, "We're going to Chicago." So it was really great because Tommy Lee was so good in Under Siege, and the melding of those two together. They only have one scene together, really. Mm-hmm. But the fact that we were able to put those two actors together, Harrison and I and Tommy were not watching The Fugitive in the '60s. We were doing other things, I watched a couple of the episodes and got a sense of this doctor who was unjustly accused. And I said, "Well, okay, let's just make a standalone thriller, and this drug protocol will be the center of the issue of his being intimidated." Mm-hmm. And we started working on the script, and a guy named Roy Arbogast was a special effects supervisor, and Peter McGregor Scott, who's a Brit, who's an incredible producer, who unfortunately passed away this year. We sat down and said, "How are we going to make this train crash work?" And this is before digital effects. And Peter and Roy came up with the concept of finding an old train, taking the engine out of it, and pushing it from behind and having it go off the track. So it's a real train. And and then we had this issue of how this flying off a dam, you know, and mm-hmm. The editor, Dennis Verkley, said, "You can't." We took a dummy. We literally threw it off this dam in North Carolina. And it's never going to work. They call it stick man, you know. So anyway, we kept breaking rules. But the main thing about The Fugitive was so much of that film is improvised. I mean, I knew each day what we had to accomplish in terms of storytelling. But the actual words, so much of Tommy Lee's dialogue was created by Tommy Lee and myself right on the set. And I think that the film has a kind of reality and a spontaneity, especially with all those Chicago accents and characters, mm-hmm. Because of that, you know. And I think, you know, in the theater, you get to work with the director and the actors and the writer for quite a while working things out. On a movie set, you know, you're spending $100,000, $200,000 a day, and you've got to get out within so many hours. There's not a lot of chance to improvise mm-hmm. or to work things out. But we were able to figure it out and mm-hmm. to do it that way. And
you answered one of my questions, because I watched the film again on a plane going to London a couple of weeks ago, and I said, "Where in Illinois or Wisconsin or Michigan or Indiana is that dam?" Because I said, "I want to go see that."
It was an Alcoa dam in North Carolina, and that's the only two scenes we shot were the dam scene and the mm-hmm. train crash. Everything else was done in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. But I'm supposed to believe that that's within driving distance of Chicago, right?
Well, Marion, you know, the prison down in Marion is very far south. You know, could have been down there near Carbondale.
Andy Davis is with us. Of course, the Fugitive opens the Ebert Fest event, 20th annual Roger Ebert's Film Festival, starting tonight at 7 o'clock at the Virginia Theater. Working with such high-profile actors, how were they to work with? where they, you say they improvised some, but
they were both
on a day-to-day basis.
Total pros, you know. Harrison, you know, was very supportive, and you know, he. It's funny because there are certain things that happened that were interesting. The big speech that Tommy gives, you know, about every doghouse, hen house, you know, find them, you know, that was actually a line that was sent by Warner Brothers for the trailer. It wasn't even the script. And Tommy didn't really want to do it. And so we shot, and then it wound up in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then you see Harrison limping a lot at the end of the movie. He hurt his knee running through the woods at one point, you know, and mm-hmm. he was a real trooper to staying in there. But mm-hmm. they were very, very professional and supportive. And I don't think they had any idea that the film was going to be as successful as it was nominated for Best Picture. And I remember we showed the film to Warner Brothers. It was cut in 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. And we showed it to Warner Brothers, and Harrison was sitting next to me. And after, before Tommy even gets on, when he breaks down, he's crying, and in his interrogation, he kissed me because he realized that his character had such empathy mm-hmm. of losing his wife and being accused. So it was really very, it's very rewarding to be able to satisfy those actors.
We're here with Emma Asante as well. Emma Asante, the director of Belle. And tell us about Belle a little bit. For people that don't know, maybe there's some that don't. Talk about give me the overall plot,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, Belle is based on a true story of a young woman who was raised in 18th century England. She is biracial. Her father was a British captain. And her mother was an African slave. And they had a child together, and her father decided that he wanted her to be raised in the life that he was accustomed to. And so when she was about 6 or 7 years old, he takes her to his uncle, who happens to be the Lord Chief Justice of England. He is the highest judge in the land. And she is raised in the UK in a place that today is London, called Hampstead, but back then was the countryside still, in a house called Kenwood House, which is a national treasure for us in the UK. It's a place where people go today to visit. It's like a museum, but it has wonderful land around it where you can go to jazz festivals, to walk your dog, wherever. It's a national treasure. And most British people didn't know that this young biracial woman in 18th century England was raised there. So it's her story. It's the story of her and her father, who at the time is presiding over a really important case involving slavery. It's really about her impact on him to a certain extent, her life as a woman growing up of color in a completely white household, and really raises the question whether or not she had an impact on the major decision that he made with regards to this slavery case, and whether that went on to have an effect on really destabilizing slavery, not just its origins in the UK, but the impact it had on America as well.
Yeah, because the slavery issue was very contentious in the UK, as it then eventually led to the United States, which of course resulted in the Civil War.
But. Exactly, and there was, you know, a belief that there was no such thing as slaves in the UK. And what was interesting about the UK is it didn't really want to have any slaves on its shores, but it was very important to know that the kind of marketing of slaves began in the UK. Mm-hmm. You know, the ships would leave from the UK, owned by slave ship owners, who would then travel to Africa, and then they would then pick up their slaves and travel to the Caribbean or the US and deliver their mm-hmm. slaves, and then pick up spices and cotton and whatever they could exchange those slaves for, and come back to the UK, and the triangle would go on and mm-hmm. on and on in that way.
Mm. Was your film received well when it came out?
It was really received well, and particularly actually in America. Mm-hmm. It was interesting for me because I wasn't really sure how a woman of color who was British would be received in America, but she was massively embraced, and it was very beautiful. We opened on Mother's Day in 2014, and it was beautiful to be at the first screenings, the first public screenings, and to see little girls who turned up dressed as Belle, you know, in their 18th century clothes. Uh-huh. That was just the beginning, and you know, many would go and see it several times in one day. It was, it was a really, again, satisfying experience to have in many ways.
Emma Asante is the director of Belle. That'll be shown at the Virginia Theater coming up at 8:30 tomorrow night. We've been visiting as well with Nate Cohn, who's here, And, of course, we also have Andy Davis here from the University of Illinois, Chicago native, director of The Fugitive, which starts everything tonight at 7. Let me ask the two directors, too, just as you're, and I announce games, you're involved in the game and the broadcast, then you go back and listen to it, and you think, okay, maybe I could have done this or should have done that. Anything as a director, you're so plugged into what you're doing. What's your reaction when you see the final product of what you've done? I'll let Emma answer that first.
I think for me, early on, you know, weeks, months, possibly even a year after the movie's finished and I see it, I'm thinking about what happened on that day, how if I'd had more time, I could have done A, B, C, D. Usually several years after I've made a film, I'm usually pretty okay with it. It's, you know, I receive it in a different way, I think, than when I immediately have to look at it and sit with it with the early audiences. And ultimately, you know, you have the moment, you know, as Andrew said, to make the movie. And you do your very best. You do your best with the actors. It's about the dynamic that you have with the actors. And usually I'm okay. A few years later, I'm okay. And Belle, for instance, which I made 5 years ago now, I'm just really glad I got to tell her story and that I got to allow audiences to connect with who she was and know that she existed in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Same thing for you, Andy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think some of my best work has been done under a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. where you don't have enough time and you've got to improvise. And you've got the sun's going down, or they're saying, come on, we're going to pull the plug or whatever. So you have to, you know, I started off making documentaries. I actually worked on Medium Cool with Haskell Wexler in 1968 mm-hmm. during the riots. I call them the police riots, not the peace riots. But anyway, I've looked back at my films, and you know, I wanted to make films that had a significance, and I went from working on Beat Street as the writer and directing part of it to doing Code of Silence, a Chuck Norris movie. But I was able to take these action guys, these tough guys, these people who were involved in fighting and shooting, and try to make political films out of it. As I look back on my work, I'm not interested in violence being an entertainment. It bothers me. Even the opening of The Fugitive, which starts with the terrific murder of Kimball's wife, it turns me off. But it, you know, it motivated the movie, and of course, drama is about life and death. But I just, you know, I try to watch some television. There's so many shows on television, and they're so dark today. And I did a movie called Holes, a few years ago, that was an award-winning children's book, and that's probably one of the most rewarding movies I've made because it had substance, even though it had a lot of tension in it. So I think that, you know, I look back at, like, we had to do a sample reel for a festival I was in recently, and I looked at the stuff, and boy, how did we do all that work? You know, it's a lot of work, you know. Yeah. And the days have changed because it used to be that the studios, you know, they weren't so concerned about the worldwide picture. When I started working at Warner Brothers, Bob Daly and Terry Semel said, you know, we're happy to hit doubles. You know, and if you hit a home run, great. And now you have to make a movie that works in China, mm-hmm. it works in Russia, mm-hmm. it works in South America. It can't be about a very American subject or about sports or about things that are uniquely colloquial. And so you're making eye candy and a lot of comic books. So it's the fabric has changed a lot.
Very, very interesting. All right, we're going to come back with more. We're going to take a quick break here. Nate Cohn is with us. You can let him run through some of the other films we're going to be seeing. We're so pleased to have our guest, Emma Insante, director of Belle. Nate Cohn is with us. And, of course, Andy Davis, who will open the Roger Ebert Film Festival with The Fugitive coming up tonight at 7 o'clock at the Virginia. We'll come back with more with our guests after this timeout. All right, welcome back. Penny for your thoughts. News Talk 1400 DWS. Brian Barnhart here with our guests, again, Andy Davis. We've got Emma Insante and Nate Cohn is with us as usual here each year. He's been with the Ebert Fest, Roger Ebert's Film Festival, 20 years. Chaz Ebert, unable to get away from Los Angeles until late, so she will be, of course, all part of the festivities throughout the weekend. Unable to join us this morning, but we're pleased to have the guests we have, and they've been terrific here in this first half hour. Got some more coming up until 10 o'clock in the next 20 minutes. Want to remind you that make sure that voting continues on the News Talk 1400 DWS. The News Gazette Media is the people's choice. It's the best of East Central Illinois. WDWS.com. Cast your votes in a variety of categories, including food, dining, nightlife, kids, pets, and more. The People's Choice, brought to you in part by Central Illinois Credit Union. Well, Nate, we've mentioned two of the films, The Fugitive and Bell. What else is going to go on? Why don't you give us the big picture, I guess, as to what's
going
to be going on?
We show about 12 films every year. And the thing we really love about the festival is we show one film at a time, so everybody sees the same film together, so it promotes a community among the audience members. And we're showing, as we've said, The Fugitive tonight. Tomorrow morning or at noon, we're showing a 70-millimeter print of Interstellar, film directed by Christopher Nolan. And one of the reasons we're showing the film is that we love the film, but we also love the fact that the science in the film is believable, as opposed to the science in most other space movies. And so, for the first time, we're actually going to be discussing the science after the screening of the film. We have a physicist from Mexico coming in from Mexico City to talk about it. I'm going to butcher his name, but it's Miguel Acebera. Also on stage with him will be Brand Fortner, who's a graduate of the University of Illinois, and he currently teaches astrophysics in North Carolina. And so we're going to be talking about wormholes and other bizarre scientific investigations that sort of underscored the movie itself. That will be followed by Selena, which is directed by Gregory Nava, star Jennifer Lopez. And Gregory Nava, the director, will be with us. And then we have Bell at 8:30 on Thursday night. On Friday, we start with the film with Columbus, which is a beautiful little film that was shot in Columbus, Indiana, and deals with the architecture of the community. And we had the director of that film with us, who's Korean-American. His name is Koga Nata. We have a producer of the film, Andrew Miano, who's been to the festival before. And we have two of the executive producers, Ruth Ann Harnish and Bill Harnish. We're going to talk a little bit about how independent film gets financed, because they've invested in a lot of very successful small films. Alloy Orchestra is with us again at 3:30 on Friday with A Page of Madness, which is a Japanese silent film, which is a first for us. And at 8:30 on Friday night, we're showing American Splendor, which is an extraordinary film about Harvey Pekar, who's a cartoonist, not terribly successful, who got a great underground following. The directors will be with us, Sherry Springer Berman and Bob Pulcini, as well as the producer, who is Ted Hope, who's been with us before. Ted Hope is currently head of film acquisition at Amazon. On Saturday, we start at 10:30 a.m., which is early for us, with 13th, which is Ava DuVernay's documentary about black incarceration. And she's here. Ava DuVernay, who you might remember from directing Selma and A Wrinkle in Time, will be with us. She's flying in from Los Angeles to be with us. At 2:30 on Saturday, we're showing Daughters of the Dust, and the director, Julie Dash, will be with us. That's a feature film that was shot about the off-islands of North Carolina. Rambling Rose will be shown at 5:30. It's a film that starred Laura Dern and her mother, and it's the director of that film, Martha Coolidge, will be with us. You notice we have a lot of women directors involved with this festival. Yeah. And then Saturday night, there is no female involved in this film. It's The Big Lebowski. And we're showing that at 9:30. And Jeff Dowd, who is the inspiration for the character that Jeff Bridges played in the film, a larger-than-life personality, who's been involved in the film business for a long time, will be with us.
I just need to Julianne Moore is in a fantasy sequence in that movie.
That's probably the only scene you remember from the
film.
Well,
because she's in The Fugitive, but go ahead.
Okay. you're messing up our marketing.
That's what a director's supposed to do. Keep going, Nate.
Yeah, okay.
Disrupting the order.
And then our Sunday musical is a documentary entitled Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World. And one of the directors of that film will be with us. It's about a Native American who recorded a song called Rumble in the mid-1950s that some credit is one of the major inspirations for rock and roll. Hmm. I should also like to mention that we have our panel discussions, which are free and open to the public, in the lower level of the Hyatt Place in downtown Champaign, starting on Thursday morning with our panel, which is sponsored by Rotten Tomatoes this year, the website. And the panel is entitled Critical Mass, the Future of Film Criticism. And Claudia Pugh, who is the head of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association, will moderate that panel. And there'll be 14 critics on that panel.
Wow, 14.
So it's going to be a battle for airtime, shall we say. And then on Friday, we have two panels, one sponsored by the local Alliance for Inclusion and Respect. It's entitled Challenging Stigma Through the Arts. That's at 9 a.m. on Friday morning, moderated by Eric Pearson, who's currently teaches in San Diego, but he's also a graduate of the University of Illinois. And then we have at 10:15, Leveling the Playing Field, Hollywood in the Time of Me Too and Time's Up, moderated by Kerry Rickey. And a number of our filmmakers are going to be on that particular panel. Mm-hmm. And finally, on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., Dr. Richard Newport is going to give a lecture on the Lumiere brothers and the birth of cinema, also in the lower level of the Hyatt. Mm. And it says that radio with you at 9 o'clock on Wednesday.
So here you are. You made it. So we do appreciate you running through all of that. And I think of all the films right now, the Big Lebowski is sold out, but there you have the group passes, I mean the whole festival passes.
Yeah. And then there are still individual tickets available for all the films. Mm-hmm. If you want to see The Big Lebowski, come a half hour before the start of the film. We'll have a rush line, and any seats that are not filled, we'll admit folks in the rush line. And you know, the theater holds almost 1,500 people, and mm-hmm. We've had full houses, but we've never turned anybody away. So the chances of getting in are pretty good. Yeah.
And remind us again, Nate, how with Chaz and Roger and how they select the films. I mean, I know Roger, when this first started,
Roger selected all the films. And the idea was to show films that had been overlooked by audiences, critics, or distributors. Roger felt that it would be a conflict of interest for him to sort of favor films that were successful by... So he became a champion of films that have been overlooked or that deserve a second chance. Also, they're overlooked genres, overlooked formats. We always show documentary. We always show something associated with music.
Maybe a silent film.
Mm-hmm. And 70mm print. So, mm-hmm. I've worked with Roger to do that in the very beginning, and we prepare these giant lists of films and hone them down, and we still have those lists. So Chaz and I draw a lot from those lists, mm-hmm. but we also look for films that, like Bell, that reflect what Roger thought would be the type of film that we should show in the festival. Yeah.
I think what people really enjoy about it, and you've had a hand in this, and Roger and Chaz, just involving the directors like we have today and the people, you know, that put everything together and what they were thinking and just mm-hmm. talking about it before and after the film. I think just that adds so much to the experience, I think, right? Rather than just turning on a projector and
going. Yeah, exactly. And what we do that most festivals do not do is that we allow enough time, at least an hour after the screening of each film, for that kind of discussion. Mm-hmm. and we involve the audience in a Q&A. And what we've discovered is that our audiences are highly cinema literate, and their questions sometimes stump the people who made the film. So yeah. you have that to look forward
Thanks.
To.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to that.
All right. We're here with Nate Cohn, of course. So we've known him for many years. He's been on with Jim all these different years. We've got Emma Asante, director of Bell, and we've got Andy Davis, the director of The Fugitive, among the many accomplishments for both of those two guests today. And a couple of notes we need to mention, too, Nate. Mary Frances Fagan passed away. Certainly she was a help with all of this. And a couple of folks at the Virginia Theater as well, who, Leonard Doyle and Sherry Slade.
Yeah, they were part of the heart of the festival. I mean, you'd see Leonard outside the theater every year, and he would welcome people and greet people and try to keep people happy waiting in line. And Sherry guarded the door where Roger and Chaz sat. Mm-hmm. So she was a tremendous presence at the festival as well. And Mary Frances, of course, worked for American Airlines and convinced them to sponsor the early years of the festival and help us fly in folks from Europe. And I think we brought some folks from Japan one year. Mm-hmm. So she'll be greatly missed. And we're also dedicating the festival to her, but also to Roger, because it is mm-hmm. the 20th anniversary right. of the festival, which is why we have so many film critics coming, because Roger was, after all, a film critic.
Mm-hmm. Did you two, I know, cross paths with Roger at some point along your path, you know?
Well, I actually remember Roger on Sunday night standing outside the Auditorium Theater where they used to show foreign films. Hmm. This is in 1965. And he would pontificate afterwards with all the graduate students about the meaning of these Buñuel films or Fellini films. Mm-hmm. And he was a townie. And I think it's a real tribute to what Roger, from this little town in central Illinois, his impact on the world of cinema. Mm-hmm. And actually, Stony Island was one of his first movie reviews, my first film for the Sun-Times. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, I was invited to the Aspen Institute. As I had hair in those days, I was the fair-haired young filmmaker with Maya Angelou and all kinds of different people mm-hmm. about the future of television and film, and Roger was there. And he was cracking jokes at the airport, and everybody was laughing. So I had a great relationship yeah. with Roger.
My experience with him was only that he was a film critic, that as a filmmaker, as a young filmmaker, you know, the benchmark mm-hmm. was to Roger liking your film.
Right,
you know,
to get that thumbs up.
To get yeah. that thumbs up, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, he was a big presence, but mm-hmm. sadly not someone mm-hmm. I met.
We do have a caller for our guests. If you want to put your headphones on, if you want to put those on, we've got Chuck with us here this morning. Hey, Chuck, good morning. You have a question for our guests?
Yeah, I sure do. I got a question and a suggestion for Nate. My question is, how's the film selected? Who does the selection of the film?
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about that, but give us a quick review there.
Chaz Ebert and I select all the films. There's no submission process. There's no lobbying, and we select films basically in two ways. We have these lists that Roger drew up for the first about 15 years of the festival. So we draw from that list for some films, like The Fugitive was on that list, Daughters of the Dust was on that list, Rambling Rose was on that list, mm-hmm. and then we look for films, newer films. Like Bell, as I said, that sort of reflect what Roger looked for in films they wanted to show at the mm-hmm. festival, films that have a humanist quality to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you had a suggestion, you said, Chuck?
Yeah, I sure do, and you guys, you know, you can do what you want with it, but next year is the 50th anniversary for the movie Easy Rider.
Ah.
Is that something you guys would consider?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, but The Fugitive's anniversary is this year, right?
Right.
It's the 25th.
25th.
Well, 93, so
25th.
Okay. Yeah, 25. Yeah.
And the same for The Big Lebowski. So we're And previously we showed Do the Right Thing and Born on the 4th of July on their anniversary years. So that's thank you for the suggestion.
Yeah, 50 years for that movie. And hey, maybe you could give Peter Fonda here or something.
Yeah. Do you have a motorcycle?
Yeah, I do. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Chuck.
Okay, keep up the good work.
All right. We'll take a quick break here. We'll get some final comments from our guests here as we work our way to the top of the hour. Back with more Penny for Your Thoughts as we talk Roger Ebert's Film Festival, number 20, here in 2018. We're back with more after this. All right, back on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS 956. I knew this hour would go very, very quickly as we've got some great guests. Nate Cohn, of course, with us on every year to kind of promote the festival and what's going on and when to go. And you can come to the whole thing, obviously, you know, throughout the week. He said they've never turned anybody away. You'll get in there somehow, right, along the way.
But, yeah, I promise.
And also Emma Asante is with us, of course, the director of Belle. That'll be shown at the Virginia Theater. That'll be tomorrow night at 8:30. And Andy Davis from the University of Illinois and UChicago Chicago is, of course, the storyline there for The Fugitive, which comes tonight at 7. Let me ask you, Emma, you were a child actress, right?
I was.
So when did you start acting? I mean,
I started early? So I got my first job when I was 10 years old in a commercial, a Weetabix commercial. And then I got into a high school TV drama series in the UK when I was 14, and I stayed there till I was 17, and that was when I think I really connected with my love of telling stories, you know, seeing how a piece of work went from a writer's head onto the page, through our bodies, into the edit, and ended up on screen for my school friends to see and be able to appreciate was a big deal for me.
We've got a couple of minutes left. Just any quick advice you'd give to young people that want to get into this business?
You know what? I think there are so many avenues now. There are platforms out there like YouTube. We were just talking earlier about how there is the specifics that are available for you to do it, like your iPhone. You don't even have to have an iPhone. Any phone today has a camera on it. Get out there and nurture your skills, because it's all about honing your skills, I think, and then edit it together, put it on a platform, go to a short film festival, you know, make a calling card, a piece of work that you can show those who might be interested in investing in you as a talent, as someone who has something to offer.
Andy, advice from you?
Well, I think there's many opportunities to tell your story, but to get it be seen is even more difficult in some ways. I mean, today it costs $40 million to release a movie in a theatrical situation in America. So if you make a tiny little movie and somebody says, well, I have to spend all that kind of money to get it in the theater. So theatrical distribution is really under a lot of pressure. At the same time, you know, you've got systems now where they don't care what the grosses are, Netflix and Amazon. They just want to have you pay you the subscription every week. So in some ways, you can tell your stories and there's many more opportunities. Making a lot of money and getting the money back for your investors is getting harder and harder.
Well, Nate, thank you for bringing our guests in. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
And, boy, have fun here with all the films. I know it's fun every year, but, wow, 20 years. What an accomplishment.
Yeah, and it's still as vibrant as ever, and we look forward to the next 20 years.
I just want to say, Roger had a great heart, and his sensitivity about human beings and the world and his effect on telling stories that made the world a more human place is really important.
Yeah, it really is. Thank you for coming in. Enjoy your stay in Champaign.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to see you. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
Okay,
I appreciate
it. Thank you for
having
us.
We've got the news coming up at 10 o'clock. Next hour, we're going to talk a little bit about the passing of Barbara Bush. She passed away at the age of 92. We'll get into that a little bit. Take your open line phone calls throughout the rest of the morning as well here on this radio station. We'll come back with more thanks to our guests from Roger Ebert's Film Festival 2018. And this is WDWS Champaign-Urbana. It's 10 o'clock. Back on A Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS on this Wednesday morning. Glad you're with us. 356-9397 is how you can join us on the phone lines. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. And you can email us talk@wdws.com. August Skamenka is a reporter for CBS News down in Houston. Hey, August, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Brian.
Good. So you're covering all of this. You've been down there for several days, I take it?
Well, you know, I actually live in Houston.
Okay.
And have covered the Bushes for quite some time, you know, and their journeys over the years to and from generally Methodist hospital here in Houston.
Yeah.
And this is not a trip, of course, not to the hospital in this case, in the last day, but ultimately to a place where the former First Lady will lay in repose. It's not one that, even though people knew the circumstances, folks necessarily thought she wouldn't pull out from. I think there are a lot of people who felt, look, she had surprised many people many times over. She'll do it again.
Yeah,
of course, that's not what we're talking about.
Right, and a lot of the focus had been on her husband, of course, who has been in and out of the hospital, and obviously they're in their early 90s, so that he's been the one, I guess, has been talked about more, and then we just found out recently about her health.
Yeah, I was talking to a very close friend of the couple, and a point that he made, and he is himself in his 80s, he says, I think the surprise will be that she may depart before he does. Of course, the conversation we were having was before this happened, and that is exactly what happened. There had been so much focus on his health, and he was the one who seemed as though, at times, there was this big question mark, and I think no one would have anticipated it this way, perhaps until, maybe earlier this year or late last year. We saw her, she sat in front of us a few rows at the World Series, along with her husband and her son, and the former president. And she looked, I wouldn't say frail, but she had lost weight. And I can't remember whether she had an oxygen tank with her, but, she was still shaking hands, and she had people saying hello to her, and, seemed like she wanted to do what she had always done, which is just come and watch baseball.
August Gemenka with us down in Houston, covering the story of the passing of Barbara Bush. CBS News lives in Houston down there. First ladies are always very popular for the most part, as you know, August. But this First Lady just seemed so down to earth and so relatable. She was extremely popular, right?
She was so approachable. I mean, she was someone who would talk to you as though she'd known you forever. I was talking with former Lieutenant Governor of Texas, David Dewhurst, and in this state, the Lieutenant Governor plays a very prominent role. In fact, legislatively has more power than the governor. And he was, just telling me stories of how she'd put everybody at ease, but the person she would put at ease the most was the 41st president. In his ailing health, there are times that she'd walk into the room and Dewhurst is saying, I'm sitting there and here's the president in his pajamas, and she'd come in as this gale force, and automatically, just in that moment, you could see George Bush's spirits are lifted. And it's a powerful testament to the, I think, effect that she had on everyone that was in her circle.
Mm-hmm. And her sons knew her as kind of an enforcer. I mean, she could have a great sense of humor, but when mom said do this, you did it.
Yeah, that's right. And she was all family. There's no question. I had kind of an unforeseen circumstance, an encounter with her. I was at a high school football game here in Texas. I knew a player, she knew a player, but what I didn't expect was for her to show up, and she did, and she sat right beside me, and we talked, and it wasn't about foreign policy, it wasn't even about football, it was about one of her grandchildren, and that grandchild today would tell you, I think, something that many of the Bushes would say, which is, you need to commit yourself one way or another to public service, and I would venture to guess that where he began to hear that, where that passion took its first steps, may very well have been from Barbara Bush and, of course, the 41st president.
Yeah, and she was heavily involved in literacy at a very early time in people's lives, getting them started reading, right?
Yeah, so much so that somebody said to me, why don't they say instead of bringing flowers, bring books? I don't know that they would do that, but I wonder what Barbara Bush would say about the idea.
That's interesting. But before I let you go, August, are we going to see possibly all the current and former presidents and their wives at the funeral, I would assume?
I imagine we will see all of the former presidents. It is an interesting question you pose there, and you're not the first to do so. I was thinking this earlier, and somebody else asked me, and I don't know whether the current president and first lady will attend. It is an interesting question, given the trajectory of the 2016 campaign. It will certainly be fascinating to watch that play out, whichever way it goes, really.
Well, August A., I appreciate the time. Keep up the good work covering all of this. And just a sad note, but a great lady, that's for sure. A great impact, I think, on our culture and on our country as First Lady. So we appreciate you sharing some memories with us.
Thank you. So, yeah, one big takeaway here. It's just three words, something she said all the time. Faith, family, and friends. I think that's why she was comfortable in these final days of her life.
Yep, that's for sure.
You bet. Anytime.
Appreciate it. Yep, August Skamenka down in Houston for CBS. 10:26, we'll take a quick break here, Ed. Come back with more Penny for Your Thoughts. We're with you until 11 o'clock today. Had Ebert Fest in the first hour. Been talking Barbara Bush here in the second hour. Any thoughts you have, texts, emails you want to send our way, remembering her or honoring her, or thoughts about her, feel free to do that after this. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday. We'll have an open line discussion tomorrow at 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. And also Busey Money Talk at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Then on Friday, we'll have a treat for you. We'll get in kind of an agriculture day, if you will. We'll have Greg Solier, or of course, our meteorologist. He will be in studio with us, along with Dr. Jim Angel from the State Water Survey here in Champaign at the University of Illinois. And then in the second hour, Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, nationally known. We had to work on some dates that would try to work for Max, and it works out that it's the 20th coming up on Friday in the second hour. We may mix and match and have all those guys together at some point as well on Friday. So I hope you'll be with us for that. We've got the news headlines coming up. Again, continue to vote, WDWS.com. The voting continues. The best of East Central Illinois. Your votes in a variety of categories. Welcome, food, dining, nightlife, kids, pets, and more. The People's Choice brought to you in part by Central Illinois Credit Union. News headlines coming up next, and your phone calls, emails, and texts. Keep those coming in as we continue here on this Wednesday. The news is next. Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS. Been a fast show today. We had our Ebert Fest guests in the first hour, as we traditionally do over the years, on the first day of Ebert Fest, starting tonight at the Virginia Theater. Thanks you to Nate Cohn for setting everything up for us there and getting us a good preview of what's going to happen this weekend, starting tonight. I say weekend, it's during the week, too, for the 20th annual Roger Ebert's Film Festival for 2018. 356-9397 is the phone number, and we've got text as well on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 3515-357. We talked about the passing of Barbara Bush. Any thoughts on her, her life, her impact, anything you remember about her, funny story? I had a good visit with a CBS reporter who's pretty well connected, I think, to the Bush family, knew them pretty well, had some good stories about her. We're at 10:38 and 38 degrees here at DWS. Got a text in on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line talking about the Starbucks story. It says, it's much to do about nothing. When asked to leave a business establishment and you refuse, expect to be arrested. The whole scenario smells of a setup. Let us all submit to sensitivity training. Wouldn't want to risk the chance, off chance of offending someone. This country has become a social basket case with little hope for redemption. That text in on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Had a big discussion about free speech on campus, I think yesterday afternoon, around noontime, over at the University of Illinois. A couple of professors, a law professor from Southern California, also Jeffrey Stone, a law professor at the University of Chicago, talked about it at an event organized by the College of Law and Chancellor Robert Jones. Don't know if you saw the reaction to that, the story on that in the News Gazette today. One of the speakers said during the free speech movement of the 1960s, students were the ones protesting against administrators so they could speak out about events beyond campus, such as the Vietnam War. Says now it's about outsiders wanting to come to campus and students and others trying to stop them from speaking. And one of the speakers said, many students come to campus today without a strong sense of the history of the First Amendment and its role in social movements. He says if censorship were allowed on campus, we probably wouldn't have never had a civil rights movement or a woman's right movement or a gay rights movement. One of them was the co-author of a 2017 book, Free Speech on Campus. Said he doesn't want to minimize the impact of hate speech on those who have been traditionally excluded from universities. He says it's his obligation to speak out against ideas that can cause harm to students or the campus. And his says he says the best remedy for speech we don't like is more speech. So anyway, if you want to check out that article, Julie Wirth did it today. I wrote about it in the News Gazette. Check it out, news-gazette.com. 356-9397. We have an open line here up until the top of the hour. I'm going to tell you about a Crime Stoppers event coming up here in just a couple of minutes. If you're looking to shred some items, we can help you with that in just a couple of minutes. Corey Swanson's a hands-on owner. Of course, Swanson Roofing, the roofing dog. And when he says hands-on, that means he works on almost every job with the crew. Swanson Roofing, the roofing dog, is truly a family-owned business. They're from around here. Corey is a Rantoul High School graduate, University of Illinois. His wife, Melissa, of course, they're both from around here. They do not subcontract out any work. The roofing dog crew is comprised of roofing professionals certified in roof installation. Here's a couple of things to keep in mind when it comes to Swanson Roofing. They take responsibility and ownership for every past customer. And that's a cornerstone of their business. I know years ago he kept a running list of people and recommendations and of the good work that they've done. Swanson Roofing, they provide services in Champaign, Vermilion, Ford, and McLean counties. And they'll also repair with help you with small repairs and help you save your roof, even if they did not do the roof. They're happy to come out and fix any problem. Maybe you've got an issue, you're not sure quite what to do with it. You can get a free estimate. Make sure you call 217-355-ROOF, 217-355-7663, or visit Swanson Roofing online at theroofingdog.com. We'll come back with more Penny for Your Thoughts. We're at 1041 here on this Wednesday. Glad you're with us. Back with more after this. Penny for Your Thoughts rolling on here today. Glad you're with us. Penny for Your Thoughts, Newstalk 1400 DWS, 356-9397. You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Always like to see those come in, 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. We talked Ebertfest in the first hour. Got everything covered there, I think. Call the Virginia Theater, 356-9063 for ticket information and times and all of that. The Gazette, News Gazette, always has a great list of all the shows that are going on, the academic panel discussions and so forth. But 356-9063 for the Virginia Theater in Champaign. All right, you can also email us, talk@w.com. We talked about Barbara Bush, her passing, of course, all the funeral arrangements being wound up with that. The wife of one president and the mother of another president. So Abigail Adams had that distinction as well. We've got John Hecker with us here, the president of the Champaign County Crime Stoppers. How are you, sir?
Just fine. Pleased to be here and appreciate this opening your show for us to tout one of our upcoming events.
Yeah, tell me about, we're talking shredding of
precisely
items, right?
Actually, it's a combination of a shred event and drug drop-off. That will be this coming Saturday, April 21st, from 9 to noon, and it'll be at Parkland. We're using that facility. They were kind enough to open one of their parking lots to us for that event, which is wonderful. I should let everybody know it's parking lot M, which is in the northwest portion of the Parkland facility there. And it's best to enter off of Duncan Avenue coming from the south.
Okay.
We will have plenty of volunteers there to direct people to the location.
Because it's easy to get lost. That's a big parking lot.
Amen. So. Amen. Yeah. But it accommodates what we're trying to achieve extremely well because this event has been extremely well received in the past.
Mm-hmm. So what's going to go on there? What
right.
Are we gonna do?
Basically, what we will do is accept items to be shredded. We'll take up to a limit of 5 banker box sized items to be shredded, be it obviously yesterday being tax day, a lot of people may want to get rid of some of their tax material or have that shredded, whatever the case may be, but that will be a secure shredding. It will not be on site, it'll be off site, but we have Triad Shredding, which is a professional organization, is assisting us with this, which we greatly appreciate, and they will take care of all the shredding. We also have a drug drop off. Now, this is done in conjunction with the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA. We did this last year, and it was tremendously well-received, where individuals that have outdated prescription drugs or prescription drugs they've just do not need anymore, be they outdated or not, they can securely and safely drop those off, and we'll have a facility there to accommodate that through the DEA. Basically, the only thing we cannot receive would be needles or sharp items, but we accept the pills, patches, even liquids, as long as they are in a leak-proof or sealed container.
Put them in a bag or some kind of a...
Right, to contain that. We do ask for the shred event. We're asking for a small donation of $5. It's voluntary, but this is helps us in our efforts for fundraising for Crime Stoppers.
And with the pill bottle, they just if you got pill bottles sitting around the house and you're...
Precisely. You know, I think my wife was going through our drawers this morning. I think we all can identify with outdated prescription pill bottles, whatever the case may be, boxes that we've thrown in our bathroom drawers, what have you. And if you start opening those drawers, it's amazing how many come out. We had a nice bag full by the end of the morning already collected. So, but this is a very convenient, safe way to take care of those.
Because a lot of us have, especially you mentioned tax returns or tax information, there's a lot of sensitive information. We're in this age of identity theft. I mean, it's important just not have that stuff sitting around.
Precisely. And rather than just putting out in one's regular trash pickup, which can lead definitely to various instances of identity theft, this shredding effort helps to eliminate that that problem or that concern.
And when you said bankers up to five, give me a picture of the size.
This would be sort of a standard carton that one can carry. I don't have exact dimensions, but the point is that we don't want someone coming up with a semi-trailer truck full of material and saying, hey, we want this shredded. But actually five boxes, what we call banker boxes, which is these are the normal size boxes that paper would come in or what have you. Being the limit, but that can accommodate quite a bit.
Okay,
of material.
Give us the time, place, and all of that.
Right, again, that's from 9 a.m. to noon this coming Saturday, April 21st, and it'll be at Parkland College parking lot M, and again, that's in the northwest portion of Parkland and enter off Duncan Avenue. Really, you should come from the south entry point on Duncan. We will have signs out, volunteers there to accommodate this. But we think it'll be a great event. Again, shred as well as the drug drop-off.
And if people have any more questions,
I was going to say they could contact Crime Stoppers 373-TIPS or go to our website, which is probably the best, 373tips.com. 373tips.com. And information is posted there regarding this event.
Okay. Hey, John, thank you.
Our pleasure.
For coming in.
Thank you for your support for our organization. It means a great, great deal getting the word out to the community.
Keep up the good work.
Champaign
County Crime Stoppers.
All right,
we'll take a break. Back with more Penny for Your Thoughts after this timeout. Back on Penny for Your Thoughts, 10:52 here at News Talk 1400 DWS. Had a busy show today, another busy show tomorrow, and then again on Friday. I mentioned Friday, Greg Solier, Dr. Jim Angel will be with us. We'll talk a lot of weather. In the first hour on Friday, Max Armstrong, great farm broadcaster, well-known, we circled around several dates, and he was going to be in town, he'll be in studio with us. We'll take your questions for him in the second hour on Friday. Open line tomorrow at 9 and 10, 10:30, Busey Money Talk, and we'll get you ready for the Illinois Marathon, Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon coming up next week as well. So a lot going on here in our community. Had a great visit with the Ebert Fest folks in the first hour. Hope you enjoyed that. And we're moving along here up until 11 o'clock, 10:53 right now, 41 degrees. Let's see here, this day in history. I always like to throw these things in. Paul Revere in 1775 began his famous ride from Charlestown to Lexington, Massachusetts, warning colonists that the British regular troops were approaching. The British are coming, the British are coming, right? Is what they always said. All right, this day in 1906, this is the day a devastating earthquake. They've had a couple since then, but 1906, a devastating earthquake struck San Francisco, followed by raging fires. Estimate of the final death toll range between 3,000 and 6,000. That was on this day in 1906. This day in 1923, the first game played at the original Yankee Stadium in New York. Yankees defeated the Red Sox 4-1. I had a chance to broadcast some games from the old Yankee Stadium. Of course, they remodeled it at some point, and then, of course, they tore down the one that was there from 23 on until the recent one, the new Yankee Stadium. I've not been to that one yet, but that old Yankee Stadium, it's a lot bigger than you realize. I mean, it looks big anyway, but when you walk into it, and usually the teams would come in kind of through center field and work your way down the third base side to your dugout where the team's visiting team is usually. And, boy, you walk in those monuments. That stadium was just absolutely huge. And it's funny, you go from there to Fenway Park, which is very tight. And, of course, you got the big, the Green Monster and the pesky pole and everything else with it, all that you know about Fenway Park. But two parks are really dramatically different. Yankee, the old Yankee Stadium was just huge. Fenway Park, very tight. Let's see what else on this day. This is the day American actress Grace Kelly got married. The Prince of Monaco in a civil ceremony. A church wedding took place the next day. That was in 1956. This day in 1978, this was a big controversy at the time, but in 1978, the Senate approved the Panama Canal Treaty, providing for the complete turnover of the Panama Canal to Panama on the last day of 1999. And this is the day in 1983, 63 people, including 17 Americans, killed at the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, Lebanon, by a suicide bomber. So those are some of the things that have happened on this day. 1966, by the way, I found one more. Sound of Music won the Oscar for Best Picture of 1965. And this day in 1966, first Major League Baseball game played on AstroTurf took place at the Houston Astrodome. The Dodgers beat the Astros 6-3. So those are some of the things that have happened on this day in history. Also locally, found this interesting, 50 years ago, construction of a 4- or 5-story parking structure in Champaign approved by the Building and Grounds Committee at the University of Illinois Board of Trustees. That structure was to be built on the block bounded by 6th, Daniel, 5th, and John in Campustown. It would almost cover the entire block, the cost estimated then in 1968 at $3 million. So those are some of the things that have happened in and around our community here in Champaign-Urbana. A couple of sports notes. I don't know if you've I haven't followed the NBA playoffs very much, but I know that been looking to see how Brandon Paul has been doing, of course, with San Antonio. They lost their first couple of games to Golden State. Oklahoma City and Utah involved in a series there. They had a Thunder forward Paul George and Utah guard Donovan Mitchell uncertain for tonight's game two in that series. Toronto Raptors, 2-0 lead. The NBA playoffs, first time in team history, out to a 2-0 lead as they beat the Washington Wizards, 130-119 in Toronto. Celtics with a 2-0 advantage in their playoff series against the Milwaukee Bucks. The Pelicans playing the Portland Trail Blazers, former Illini Myers Leonard involved in that series. And I think the Pelicans have a 2-0 lead in that series as well. It's kind of weird to... For years, of course, the Bulls were in it, it seemed like, all the time. They haven't been in it in a while on any kind of regular basis. And the first time in a while, the Blackhawks haven't been involved in the NHL playoffs, which are continuing as well. And last night, I know you watched it probably, the Cubs and Cardinals. Cardinals won the first game of that series, as it turned out. The first, very first game had to be postponed because of snow. They moved that one into July. But the Cardinals draw first blood in their series with the Cubs. White Sox are out west. So that kind of covers the sports scene for you. A nice article on Brad Underwood, the Illini basketball coach. His recruiting has gone very well for him and his team. So an article in the News Gazette, might check that out as well today. We want to thank all of our guests for being with us during the course of the show. We talked Ebertfest. Hope you get a chance to pop over and start with The Fugitive. You've got Interstellar at noon tomorrow. You've got Selena at 4, Belle. We visited with the director of that film at 8:30 tomorrow night. Friday at noon, you've got Columbus. You've got Page of Madness at 3:30 on Friday. American Splendor at 8:30 to wrap up that particular night. And then at 10:30 a.m., 13th on Saturday, April the 21st. Daughters of the Dust at 2:30, Rambling Rose at 5:30, and then The Big Lebowski. And then Sunday at 12 noon, Rumble, the Indians who rock the world, will close out the Ebert Fest, Roger Ebert's Film Festival, 20th. And again, the individual tickets are $15, student and senior tickets $13. Virginia Theater, phone number there, 356-9063. But thank you to all of our guests from Ebert Fest. Thank you to Nate Cohn and the College of Media for setting all that up for us in the first hour. Thanks to John Hecker from Champaign County Crime Stoppers for popping in here for a couple of minutes with their events coming up on Saturday out in the parking lot there at Parkland. And also thanks to our guest from CBS for reminiscing a little bit about the passing of Barbara Bush. So we covered a lot of ground on today's show. We'll be back with you tomorrow from 9 until 10:30, so an hour and a half tomorrow with the UC Money Talk at 10:30, and then a packed show on Friday with Greg Solier and Jim Angel and Max Armstrong all joining us on Friday to close out the week. That's it for Ed Bond. I'm Brian Barnhart. Thank you for being with us, and we're back tomorrow on Penny for Your Thoughts, WDWS Champaign-Urbana.